listening to a podcast on the Black Fur Network.
Episode 51, O.J. Simpson, Part 2. In June 1995, O.J. Simpson went on trial for the murders of his ex-wife Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. The shocking verdict was watched by millions of people all over the world, but this is not where O.J.'s story ended. And now we'll discuss crimes like these. Hello and welcome to Crimes Like These with me, SJ.
And me, Paul.
And me, Sam.
Good evening. How are we?
Hello.
Grand. How are you?
Yeah.
Have you guys got snow up there?
No.
No, it's missed us, I think. I think it's much further north. Yeah. I have Scottish friends who have had snow.
Yeah.
It's like 14 degrees down here today.
14.
Yeah.
But not even as far as Scotland, like north in England as well. But it just literally, I think, has missed the Midlands.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like there's like a band in the middle of the UK, isn't there? That it's just completely missed.
Freaking out the stuff.
Yeah.
It has been cold here. It said 3 degrees, but then it said feels like -4. So I was like, that's great.
Damn.
It's great. I'm not going out.
Yesterday was 14 degrees. It's been pissing hard all day today. Yeah, no, sorry. But I think it's been 11 today.
It's pissed it down all night last night, and it's just continued on today.
Yeah, it's hammered all day today.
Yeah. What have we been up to? Films?
Films, yep.
Yeah.
Bought a biscuit jointer.
A what? Is this a DIY thing?
Post on Instagram.
Yeah.
Toy. Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
I just had biscuit and I was like, biscuit?
Biscuit.
So like Duffy said, are you going to join biscuits together? Are you going to make custard creams?
Oh, I love a custard cream. That's me too. Top tier biscuit, that.
Hell yeah, it is. Yeah. A-list.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I have watched, I did watch a film that's Oscar nominated, although the film itself isn't. But the lead and supporting actors are. It's on Netflix, and I'd never even heard of it. It's based on a true story, and it's called Naiad. And Annette Bening.
Oh yeah. I've seen it.
Annette Bening plays Diane Naiad, who basically she was she's a swimmer, basically a competitive swimmer, and she, you know. I think she goes to the trains for the Olympics and all that kind of stuff. And she kind of retires in her sort of mid to late 30s. And then when she's sort of coming up to her 60th birthday, she wants to do a massive challenge. And she basically wants to swim from Cuba to Florida.
Fuck that. Shark
City. 113 miles or something.
That's
ridiculous.
Insane.
Is it 60 hours or something ridiculous?
Yeah.
But she's like,
before, hadn't she? But when she was younger and failed.
And she failed, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I don't know how accurate. What's the actress's name?
It's Annette Bening who plays Diane Naiad, but her best friend is played by Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Hey.
I don't know how accurate, like, the lead was to the real person.
Honestly, but the film shows real footage of the real Diane Naiad.
And
Jodie Foster met there, like the real people that they were playing. I love that. I found it
kind of like she's inspiring because she's so like headstrong, but at the same time, I'm only halfway through because I have to watch it in stages because I find her really hard. The person is annoying.
Yeah. She's very like forthright. She's just like, oh, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it.
A lot of successful people are.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, fair. Reese Ifans is in it as well. He's like the captain of the boat that she charters to go alongside her.
Pilot boat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's they have insane, to like, that. Honestly.
Mental thing to want to do.
It is fucking insane what she did.
Do you know who Ross Edgley is?
No.
He's a British guy and he swam the entire circumference of the UK.
Oh my God. No. It's just not for me. Just because it's cold, never mind.
It's open water, though, and you two are out of that.
Oh, well out of it, yeah. There's no chance. I'm not dipping my toe in there.
Yeah.
The thought of being in the ocean fills me with dread, like absolute dread.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I just find it hilarious. It's fine. What's going to happen?
Anything could happen. It's the ocean, man. Fucking hell. You could just die for no reason.
You just drown.
Yeah. There's a million things.
Chip on some seaweed.
Maybe some sort of stonefish has accidentally found its way to the UK and I'm the guy that steps on it. You don't know.
Of course, yeah. I mean,
I'm the one person that will be eaten by a great white shark in the UK. I'm sure. Why I don't go in there.
A great white.
That's why I don't go in there.
Sure. So like the three main problems that she had was plotting a course because there's like different currents and like some of the routes she'd basically be swimming against a current, it was ridiculous. And the other two things were, as you can expect, sharks because. Yeah. It's the fucking off the coast of Cuba and Florida.
You've got the big three there.
Yep, you have got the big three there. Yeah. It's mainly the white tips.
They're super aggressive too.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
But once you get close to Florida, you've got tiger sharks to worry about.
Tigers are the worst.
Yeah.
Tigers are
They'll
the worst.
They'll eat you. Not like a great white. Yeah, they will. They'll bite you and let go. The tiger shark will eat you.
Yeah.
I'm getting really enthusiastic about it.
The other one, which was the worst one for me, was box jellyfish.
That Ross Edgley guy had a bad time with them. Not box jellyfish, but jellyfish.
Yeah, it was the jellyfish that that was the worst thing for me because I was just like, no.
Just all of it. All of it.
Just all of it.
Jellyfish are like aliens anyway.
They
don't have a brain.
Like creatures, like you look at them, and you're like, you look like you. That is what people imagine aliens look like.
Yeah,
yeah.
They're on our planet, just under the water.
Yeah,
yeah.
Along with the, they're not called UFOs anymore, are they?
UAP.
UAPs. Yeah.
Is it UAP? Yeah.
Yeah. Unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Aerial UAP, phenomenon. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
They live there.
UAP.
In the ocean.
Yeah.
Maybe you might get Travis Walker.
Underwater aerial phenomenon? No, it can't be aerial, can it? Don't know what the abbreviation for that would be, but yeah. What else did I watch? I watched something else as well. What did I watch? Oh, I watched a terrible, terrible horror film called Suitable Flesh. I do not recommend unless you're interested in seeing Heather Graham's boobs.
Not particularly.
There you go then. It's kind of like, imagine if It Follows was, you saw everything and it was done in a cheesy OTT way.
Oh, God.
It's kind of like that.
No, not for me.
It's terrible. Don't watch it. It's on Shudder.
You see, They Follow has been greenlit. It's actually happening. It's in pre-production now.
I'm assuming this is in direct relation to It Follows.
It's even got Michael Monroe in it.
Oh, I'll watch
that. David, I can't remember, never remember the director's name. It's three normal names. It's Robert David Mitchell or David Robert Mitchell.
Okay.
The same director anyway, same guy.
Same director. Okay. Yep, I'll watch that. I'll watch that. How about you guys? What have you been doing?
I watched a terrible film. Did I already say when we were talking about the cinema? Argyle is terrible.
Argyle.
Awful.
I think that is the general consensus that I've seen on the internet, that it's absolute trash.
Oh, at least I know not to bother with that one then.
Yeah.
No.
Do not recommend.
No.
No. We've just finished Griselda.
Oh, how is it?
It's really good. It's really good if you just if. It's really good to watch, but when you look at the real life stuff, it's disappointing. So, like, okay. If it wasn't based on a real opinion, you go in depth. But, you know, like, Narcos was fantastic. Narcos was so accurate, and, like, it was just, they're doing it so well. Whereas a lot of effort was put into this, and, like, Sofia Vergara. Prosthetics, like she spent hours like every day having this prosthetics done to look like Griselda Blanco, and she looks fuck all like Griselda Blanco, and I mean fuck all. So yeah, she might as well have just been her normal beautiful self and it would have literally beautiful
made
self.
No difference. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole time I'd just be thinking, you look familiar. Gloria.
Yeah, it's Gloria.
Yeah, true. But so that was kind of like disappointing. And then there's so many things in it that were like, oh my God, that's horrendous. And then it didn't actually happen in real life. It's just done for like shock factor. But she was like a massive like drug lord. So the actual real story itself would have been shocking enough without all the extra stuff. But then they threw in this extra stuff, which kind of then discredited the series. So I was disappointed for that reason.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's like American Sniper, isn't it?
American Sniper is absolutely dreadful. Will not
seen it actually.
I will never watch that again.
But the real guy, is it something Kyle something?
Oh, I can't remember the guy's real name.
Yeah,
it's Bradley Cooper, isn't it?
Yeah. But everything the real guy says, like, was basically all proved to be lies.
Oh yeah, see, that's the thing. And then I don't think it matters how good like the thing is standalone. When you base it on what you're saying is true and then not, you're left disappointed, I think.
I try and go into things that are based on a true story with very, very
take it with a pinch of salt. Yeah.
I try not to think about the source material at all.
Yeah.
With
that's
films.
That's the best way of doing it, I think.
Yeah. I feel like they've got to make it more entertaining.
Yeah,
that's it, isn't it?
It was like she was like a massive, massive like drug lord. Like the story itself is freaking insane. Like she's female for one, but the story itself is insane. You don't have to dramatize it. It is dramatic enough. It is dramatic and gory and everything that comes with that whole life enough without sort of being like, oh, and this happened, and then you look and you didn't. You know, that's rubbish. That's disappointing. But if you do go into it with the mindset that Paul has, then I think you'll be fine and you'll enjoy it.
Okay, I'll add it to the list.
I think that comes from watching films that I've read the books of.
That's,
you've got to separate it because otherwise you're not going to enjoy the film.
Yeah,
and I know we've talked about this before, and very few films that are based on books very rarely are as good as the book.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's only one that springs to mind. Jaws. That is. No. Oh. I've never read the book though.
That was very different.
But I know you'll agree with what I'm going to say. High Fidelity.
Oh, yeah. I think they're on
it's
a
just
level.
Like it.
The book and the film are equal to me.
Equal. Even though one's set in the UK. Yeah, it's my favourite as well. But like, even though the book is set in the UK and the film is set in Chicago, it doesn't even factor into it.
No,
all the beats
works.
it just completely works.
Yeah.
Completely works. It's insanely good. Good. It's the only book I've ever read more than once.
I've read it. I've literally read that maybe must be 10 times.
Yeah, I probably have as well.
I absolutely love it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible. Incredible. I did read a very good book actually. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Sam, I think you would like it. If you can find an audio book of it, because I know you're not a fan of having an actual book.
Yeah.
Is it an old book?
No. Oh. Recent.
Do you know what I'm thinking of?
What are you thinking of?
The Seven Sons of Katie Elder, which is an old John Wayne film, I think.
Oh, is it?
Is it that?
Oh, I don't know.
It might just be The Sons of Katie Elder, actually. All right, forget I said anything.
It's called The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, and it's basically this young sort of journalist who works for a magazine in New York, and she somebody contacts the magazine to say that this a classic Hollywood actress wants her to write a piece, a feature on her. And she specifically asks for this journalist who's like a nobody, basically. And like the magazine are like, you know, why has she asked for you? Like, we've got better writers and we've offered them to her. And she said, no, she wants you. And basically this actress wants her to write her biography, basically, and start spilling all this tea about all her husbands and her life and everything. And she's one of these like actresses. If you think along the lines of like Bette Davis, she kind of reminds me of that kind of person. But it's fucking brilliant.
It's
by Delia Owens. It's the same woman who wrote Daisy Jones and the Six, which I think is a series as well.
With
Sam Claflin. Yeah, it's on Prime, isn't it? I've not seen it. I want to read the book first, but I've heard that's really good. And she's written a bunch of other stuff as well. But yeah, it's really, 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 really good.
Nice. I've been reading Misery.
I love Misery.
Wow.
Yeah, I've never read it, actually. It's my first time. I've read loads of Stephen King, but never Misery.
It was the first Stephen King book I ever read.
I think mine was probably a compilation, like short stories. I think it was the short stories. Dreamscapes. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved that. I had that as well.
Same.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Yeah, Misery was the again, book and the film.
Oh, yeah, the film's great.
Yeah, the film's brilliant. Oh, who doesn't love Kathy Bates? Exactly. Oh. Talking of books.
Oh, yeah.
If I did it.
If it's the tiniest if ever. I did listen to the audiobook.
I was gonna, but then as soon as I found out he didn't write it, I don't want to start now.
Well, it was like a ghost writer. Oh, I don't know. It was.
Yeah, but he didn't even write it.
No, it was some. I can't remember the guy's name who wrote it.
He disavowed the book too. He distanced himself from it.
So. He did. Yeah.
I thought it was just like a blatant admission, basically, that
he's
making
not.
Money on. But no, it's not.
No, it's him literally denying everything.
Yeah.
And spinning another web, basically. He's just like, it's just lies on top of lies. Yeah,
like this entire trial.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Outstandingly stupid, this trial.
It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And it was such a spectacle. It was, even though it was like, you know, obviously it was real life, but the drama and everything surrounding it, you know, all the people outside in the streets.
But that was the problem, because it became so racially motivated and so political that it's like people seem to forget that two people had been murdered.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't about that at all.
Exactly. It's completely detracted from the murders.
It was more a trial for the LAPD than it was
OJ. It really was.
Particularly that one dude who was recorded saying the N-word a bunch of times.
We'll get to him. We will get to him. picking up where we left off on the last episode. That was really hard to say.
Words are hard.
So, yeah, OJ had finally been arrested. So now we're going to cover the trial. So the trial started in June 1995. Let's talk about OJ's dream team of
Christ.
How many lawyers did he have?
Four.
There was more than that. There was more than that.
The main team at trial, there was four.
So the whole team was F. Lee Bailey, Robert Blasier, Sean Chapman Holly, Robert Shapiro, Alan Dershowitz, and Robert Kardashian. And the main star of the show, Johnny Cochran. Let's not forget Johnny Cochran.
Just a group of out-of-shape middle-aged men who thought they were really fucking cool.
Yeah, basically.
I found them all really annoying.
I hated every one of them. Like, even if I hadn't seen them in this trial, another trial, I would just know I wouldn't like them. They're arrogant.
Yeah.
Dershowitz was the worst.
Yep.
Just a weasel of a man.
Waitresses' asses.
Yes, that is exactly what they're like. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that kind of vibe. Yeah, definitely.
The poor fucking Sorry, I'll keep swearing.
No, go on.
The poor prosecutor just looked so out of his depth. He just looked confused and shook.
Yeah, because it was Marsha Clark, Chris, what was his name? Because he was the one that asks OJ to put on the glove.
We're so bad at names on this podcast. Really, it should pay more attention to names.
Chris Darden was.
Chris Darden. Are you going to cut all this and just have your voice?
I am, yeah.
His lawyer, Chris Darden.
Yeah, I am, yeah. Yeah, so let's just get into it. I mean, opening statements. The main thing for the defense was they were playing the racism card, and yeah,
from the off.
They weren't. I don't think they were wrong.
No, they weren't. They were in LA.
They were in LA, and obviously Johnny Cochran had, you know, made his career of, you know, representing people that had been brutalized by the police because they were African American.
Yep. And also Michael Jackson.
I was just about to say that he did represent some famous people. There was a couple of other famous people as well.
Todd Bridges
and Jim Brown. Jim Brown was another sports star, apparently. Don't know in what sport, but and Michael Jackson being the most famous one. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the prosecution, their sort of main party line was he killed her because he couldn't have her. Yeah. That was where they were going with it. And Johnny Cochran, his part of his opening statement as well was really interesting, because not only was it the racism thing, he said something, this is not verbatim, but he said something along the lines of the evidence will show negligent handling by LAPD, which has compromised compromised the evidence in the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hinting that they had planted evidence, mishandled it, corrupted it, etc. Yeah.
Do you know what? I do sometimes wonder, I mean, let's be honest, he did it. But what if he didn't? What if he was set up?
Yeah. Who would it have been though?
Oh, who knows? What if it had been the LAPD? What if it had been like, because he had a lot of business dealings. Obviously this is hypothetical because he clearly did it. But it just say he didn't, like, mad, and all this has happened to him and he didn't do it.
I mean, he was found not guilty. We know that. Spoilers.
Yeah, political.
Political.
Stupid suggestions by the prosecution.
Oh, I mean,
why don't you put the glove on? Why don't you do that?
The prosecution would just
obviously we haven't really gone into detail, but the copper's lying and then being found out that they're lying. So it's discrediting. It's not proving that he didn't do it. It's just proving that they couldn't prove that he did it. And you are right. It literally just did feel like it was more against a trial against the Allied police force.
But the evidence was insane. Like we mentioned on the last one, but like there's this, I can't remember who he was within the court. I think he was one of the lawyers. But he said he'd never seen so much physical evidence for a crime in his whole career.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was literally a trail of blood from the crime scene to his bedroom.
To his bedroom. So the two gloves were found at the scene. One was behind the house and one was actually at the crime scene where the bodies were. But there was a blood trail, a literal blood trail.
Yeah.
From the two houses. So Nicole's house where they were murdered on Bundy in Brentwood to the Rockingham Mansion, isn't it? Where OJ lived. There was blood on the Bronco. There was blood in the Bronco.
Yep.
There was blood on a pair of socks that they found in OJ's
bedroom.
Mad. Yep.
And then not only that, though, like, it had the victim's blood on.
It had all three.
OJ's blood. Yep. Like, big, obviously from defence wounds and stuff. And it's
part the problem is they weren't so shit hot on DNA back then. So they could only say it was consistent
with
the two victims.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't be enough, though. It's like the chances.
There's no way in today's world he'd get away with that.
No, he wouldn't. The LAPD detective that found pretty much the key pieces of evidence, so the gloves, the blood on the Bronco, and the socks in OJ's bedroom, was Mark Furman. And he did testify on the stand. He probably shouldn't have. I mean, some of the, even the witnesses that for the defense, like they got Nicole's sister in, that was quite heartbreaking watching her when she was on the stand. Kato, the Nicole's house guest, who was just who just looked like a bomb, like and I watched a documentary where they interviewed one of the jurors back in, I think it was like from 2016, and when he was asked about Kato, the first thing first words out of his mouth, he was like, that guy's full of shit. He was full of shit. And you know, when you see his testimony on the stand, it's just like he's nervous, he's twitchy, he's, you know, he just didn't look convincing at all.
He's lying under oath.
He was trying to say that the banging that he heard on the side of the house was when OJ dropped the glove behind the house. And I'm like, how do you know that? Can you see through walls?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just crazy, absolutely crazy. Yeah, they obviously touch on the previous incidents at the house. So they touch on the 1989 New Year's Eve incident, which is the first one where Nicole had called the police, and when the police show up, she runs out of the bush. And obviously they play the 911 call in the courtroom. It's just, and like, OJ's lawyer, to counter this, he plays a video of OJ 24 hours before the murder outside his own house, playing with his kids, being the loving, doting father. And he's like, does this look like a man that would do this? And it's like, really?
Yeah. I mean, have you seen Ted Bundy?
He was a handsome chap, though, wasn't he?
Did you see him at his charity events?
Yeah.
Did you see him at his Samaritan's job?
It was a call handler, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Just absolutely ridiculous. I find it insane how the blood, there was a literal blood trail between the two houses. I can't, and the shoe print as well.
Yeah, in a size 12, which was his size, and it was a designer shoe.
Yeah, it was like really rare. Hardly anyone were made. And he,
like, how many random killers are going to be
wearing them? Didn't he say, like, I wouldn't be caught dead in those ugly ass shoes? And then there was a picture of OJ wearing the shoes.
That was in the trial. Where the shoe thing came in, that they proved that it was, you know, that
no good after the trial.
I mean, no, it's just absolutely fucking pointless, isn't it? That was during the trial for the Goldman and the Brown family when they sued for defamation after trial.
That was during the civil suit.
If the police hadn't have been so goddamn dodgy and then lying, like the thing is, some of the things they've done were dodgy anyway, but it's the fact that they lied under oath and then it came out that they had lied. So then the jury are like, excuse me, you're obviously not credible. And then that, alongside with the glove situation, I think if it wasn't for that, I think he possibly would have got guilty. Who they had in the people they had in the jury, their like race and ethnicity was obviously what like OJ and his lawyers wanted, because they were playing the race card, and then they massively like heavily played on that alongside with, you know, the police not being credible. which obviously made the whole thing an absolute circus. It also kind of made a mockery of that community, to be fair, because MJ was not really in that culture anyway. Like, he was basically,
he was almost trying to distance himself from that culture.
Yeah, exactly. Because it didn't benefit him and his career and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But then what benefited him in this instance was being black. So then he played on that, because that's what he is. He's just like a narcissistic person that would just gravitate towards, use people for what he needed from them. And, you know, he was very fortunate with the jury that was selected. It was like mostly females for one, which he obviously got that empathetic nature. And then the motherly side of things, but then also obviously their ethnicity. There were a lot, mostly black, weren't they? I think. Therefore, like, it just played into their hands, because the argument to read it, like, we read it and you're like, this is fucking ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. But it just played, they just got really lucky so many times.
They did, yeah.
Yeah.
So the LAPD detective Mark Furman, they caught him out in a lie, and this is directly linked to the racism card that, you know, that the defense were playing. So Mark Furman was questioned on the stand about using the N-word, and they asked him, had he ever used it in the last 10 years? And he was adamant that he was like, no, not that I recall, blah, 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 blah. And it turned out that, a woman came forward who was a screenwriter, and she had been doing consulting work with Mark Furman from the LAPD. And she had got a recording of her interview with him, dropping the N-word like it's a comma, basically. they catch him in the lie.
I mean, it wasn't just using the N-word, it was what he was using in conjunction with saying.
To quote Mark Furman, he said, put them together in a big group and burn them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And another thing was, if you take the first six sentences that come out of an N-word's mouth, and you can take it, guarantee it's a lie.
Just disgusting. Just absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, and unfortunately for him, all caught on recording.
Yeah. Yeah, so they caught him in a lie, and obviously, you know, if they're proving that an LAPD officer is on the stand lying about something, you know, about anything, regardless of whether it's using a racial slur or anything like that, you know, it's just going to discredit your case. It's not going to do you any favours whatsoever.
No. And also go towards, like, that they did plant the evidence and were trying to get OJ as such, because he's a massive racist and he just hates all black people. And again, taking away from what the actual trial was about, really. Wasn't there another police officer, he was caught out lying as well, wasn't he? And that was about the evidence handling.
It was the lab technician.
They tore him apart.
It was the forensic guy. I do have his name somewhere. Where's his name? Dennis Fong. Yeah. It was Barry Sheck that from OJ's legal team that absolutely tore him a new one on the stand, because he was saying, he basically pointed out that he wasn't wearing gloves while handling the evidence. And he was suggesting that the LAPD lab testing facility was, to quote, a cesspool of incompetence. That's what he said. And this led on to the conspiracy to frame OJ for the murder, basically, which is just insane.
It is insane.
It's just insane.
But this is the thing, that the whole, like, police force, like every department, they handled the case terribly anyway. So had that, it's kind of like this should have been two trials, like the one against the handling of it all, and then one for obviously the murder, but...
Yeah,
that obviously didn't happen. But if
that's too much money,
if they'd have handled the case better, they'd have had like OJ's lawyers would have had less to grasp onto. But everything just pointed to the fact they were incompetent, that maybe someone did mess up somewhere, maybe someone was trying to frame him. You could, I suppose they couldn't actually genuinely be like, yes, okay, you've done your job so well, there is without a shadow of a doubt. If you're a OJ fan and you're going to cling on to any little bit of hope, that this police force were just giving them those, like,
they just gave it away. Yeah. And like when Mark Furman was on the stand after the whole N-word debacle, he directly asks Furman, did you plant evidence? And what does he say? He starts banging on about his Fifth Amendment. And I thought, absolute piece of shit, get off the stand.
I can't remember which one of you just said it, but yeah, it made the cops just look so stupid.
Like, they did. And they handed it to him on a plate.
Yeah, they look like cops from a Benny Hill sketch or something. It was just so ludicrous and dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hated what, when I saw that, when I was watching that, I wanted to curl up and go,
I've never seen such an unorganized and incompetent prosecution for a case as big as this.
Yeah.
The prosecution, even when they first went in there, everything, all the opening and closing statements, all the cross-examinations, everything like that, there was no confidence. They had no confidence. They weren't asking the right questions. They shot themselves in the foot multiple times with unnecessary questions, like jumping back to that Chris Darden when he asks him to put on the glove. In interviews later on, they're all like, I don't know what possessed him to do that. You know, it's not something that you do unless you know the answer to.
Exactly.
And that goes for asking any question. And nobody knew he was going to do it.
And the worst thing is, it wasn't just the fact that the glove didn't fit, although there's reasons why it didn't fit. I mean, number one, they said it had been soaked in blood. So, and that was leather. Leather shrinks.
Yeah.
Secondly, he had a latex glove on, which would also make it more difficult. And he wasn't even trying that hard to get it on. You could clearly see he wasn't.
He contorted his hand, but
I could have forced my hand into a smaller glove like that.
Yeah, he'd also stopped taking his arthritis medication. Yeah.
Although probably not for that reason, because they didn't know nobody knew he was going to do that.
No, but it would make him appear more vulnerable and weak, wouldn't it?
True. Even and also he can play I Can't Hold a Knife guard.
Oh yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, oh, the other thing, so that weren't even the worst of it. The worst of it was by getting him to put that glove on meant that was basically his testimony to the jury. So he was never put on the stand because of that and was never cross examined. OJ.
Yeah.
So they never had a chance to question him.
There was another reason that he didn't take the stand, because the jury were originally only sequestered for three, they were told 3 months.
Yeah.
This case went on for 9 months. Yeah. Yeah. And OJ's statement basically to give the reasons why he wasn't going to testify, he said something was to the effect of, oh, I'm conscious of juror fatigue because they've been here a long time.
He's such a caring man.
And they basically they've got no integrity to basically trust his word because they're tired. That's what he said. Something like that. Yeah, mindful of juror fatigue. That's what he said.
So much during this trial. He was so constantly so smug and
he was.
It was vile. Like, absolutely vile to watch him, knowing like he's obviously done it. This is so brutal what he done as well. It's so fucking brutal what he done, and he's just there, just like full of himself. Like, on
even when he was putting the glove on, he's all smirky and like
such an asshole.
Looking around, like, look at me,
They actually took the jury to both to the crime scene and to OJ's house so they could see the layout and the distance and everything, which is quite unusual. You don't see that. I'm surprised that they did that.
Do you know he still gets his NFL pension?
often.
Oh, well, no doubt.
Yeah, 25 no grand a month.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. That makes me mad. Just makes my fucking blood boil. Shit like that. Yeah. Yeah, so the jury were, yeah, as I say, was sequestered for 3 months, but the trial ended up being 9. The closing statements were interesting. To quote Johnny Cochran, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah.
Which was one of the most famous lines.
So a little thing about him, on their way out of the courtroom that day, one of the detectives was stood at the back of the courtroom because he couldn't find a seat. And as, what was his name?
Effley Bailey. It's Effley Bailey.
He clapped him on the shoulder, laughing, looked at the cop and said, why did he do that?
Yeah.
Even he was dumbfounded by it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, so there was some interesting stats on one of the documentaries that I watched. So at the time, 2/3 of Americans thought OJ was guilty.
And the other third was stupid.
77% of white people thought he was guilty. And 72% black thought he was innocent.
I expect all those white people are racists.
I mean, yeah.
It's got nothing to do with the evidence.
It's got nothing to do with it. Yeah, I love that when the trial was over and they did like the closing arguments and the jury went away to deliberate. Yeah. They thought they were. It's going to take weeks and weeks and weeks, and they came back in 4 hours.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. The whole trial should have lasted about 30 minutes from beginning to end. Yeah. Look at all this evidence. Yeah, he did it.
He did it. Yeah. yeah. So there was. It wasn't unanimous at first. It was a 10-2,
yeah.
Not guilty verdict. And from what that juror number 4 was saying, he was like, there was no shouting, there was no, like, you know, heated discussion. It was just very sort of like amicable and you know, going back through the evidence and stuff like that until the other two that had put in a guilty decision to come around, basically, yeah, for the unanimous decision, and basically that their decision to flip to not guilty was basically because they thought that the prosecution couldn't unanimously prove the guilt.
Yeah,
because they've done such a shit job. That's fair. That's fair. They did do a shit job.
Yeah, it is fair. But should they be penalised for doing a shit job when a man killed 2 people and all the evidence said yes?
Yeah,
this is what's wrong with the jury system. Also,
oh, for sure.
Because I mean, you're not telling me, and I bet it's really common that you're 12 people sitting in a room. 2 of those people have got a different verdict. And the rest of them are like, oh, well, we've got to stay here till we get it unanimous. And then those eventually, 9 times out of 10, people are just going to go, oh, fuck it. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I just want
I've got no doubt that that does happen.
I bet it does. Yeah, 100%. No doubt.
Which is shocking, really.
Yeah, it is. Although I think the whole system's stupid.
It's a massive overhaul, doesn't it?
You know he's guilty. Like, this is the thing with defense attorneys. I know that you kind of got to have one, but they defend people they know are guilty, right? People do really horrendous things.
Yeah, I know. It's the way they justify it is so, it's like they have to really twist and convince themselves because it's true. I think you just have to be a scummy fucker to do that. But they're like everyone deserves blah blah blah.
But it goes too far. Like they should be there to mediate between the court and the defendant. The defendant. Mm-hmm. Like they shouldn't tell you, oh, this is that and that's this and this is how it is and this is a great thing. And everyone knows it's bullshit for one thing. Like American lawyers are smarmy as fuck.
They are.
You can tell they're lying.
Mm.
Like, yeah. They're known for lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. It makes no sense.
Just like Sam said, they twist things. They put a different spin on things. So even though, you know, they'll have something in black and white written down in front of them, they'll twist it to fit their narrative. Yeah. And that's what they do. They write stories, they spin these narratives, and they make that evidence fit that narrative.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's exactly what they do. Yeah.
They should just be there to say, no, that's not fair. Yes, this is fair.
Yeah.
Not elaborate any further, because they don't know either.
Mm.
Nobody knows for sure except that one person.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
In a murder case.
No? Yeah, in a murder case, yeah. Yeah, so the jury only took four hours for a unanimous decision. What was funny about that was because everyone was like on tenterhooks waiting for this flipping decision, and none of his lawyers were there. None of OJ's lawyers were there. So they read everything out apart from the verdict, which took forever. And then the judge was like, can you all come back tomorrow for the verdict? Because his lawyers aren't here. Yeah. And everyone's just like, what?
Wait, they were having a boozy lunch at the gentleman's club. They didn't get back quite soon.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They're out slapping asses and smoking cigars.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Probably meeting with Epstein.
Yeah, Jesus. Now there's a thought.
They got a flight to catch.
Yeah, God. Just going to hop on a plane over to, what is it? Is it
Epstein Land? I don't know.
Epstein Island, wherever it was. So 3rd of October 1995, the verdict was read out. There's footage of like downtown, not downtown LA, but like Rodeo Drive and all the main streets. And it is a fucking ghost town.
Yeah, that's because they were all in
everyone was at home watching the fucking telly.
Yeah, I think half those people were in the courtroom. Decision. There was so many
they
people.
Did. Yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It looked like a convention on a Saturday.
It did. It really did. And obviously they return a not guilty verdict. So OJ was a free man. He walked out. He went straight home.
Yep.
How godlike would he have felt at that? Like, he already had
untouchable.
Himself, but untouchable. Jesus, he walked out there just floating like, I am.
Yep. Yep.
Ridiculous.
Yep. And that's the worst. That's the worst thing for a narcissist, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
An ego boost
for that.
Of that magnitude.
Yeah.
For a narcissist is just insane.
Yeah. Scary really. Which obviously
it is.
We know because he goes down a very fucking bizarre
let's talk about the defamation, the civil suit first. So the Ron Goldman's family and Nicole's family sue for defamation. So this trial started 1996 and ended in 1998. And this is where they catch OJ out on the recording about the shoes that we talked about earlier. So the lawyer, I don't think I wrote his name down. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, that poor guy.
He was great though, but he was calm and he was very just like matter of fact, like, you know, these are the shoes, and he's like, you know, ugly ass shoes, wouldn't be caught dead in those kind of thing. And then he's like, can you tell me, is this you in this photo? And he's like, yeah, it looks like me. And he's like, now look at the shoes. And you see OJ's face and he's just like, shit.
You know, that's the first criminal case he'd ever done.
Yeah.
He was a business attorney.
He was.
He had a panic attack talking to the cameras before he went into the courtroom.
Did he?
I saw an interview with him. Yeah, I saw an interview with him. And he was saying when he was stood at the podium, talking to the camera, it's the first time he'd ever done it, and he suddenly thought, oh my God, I'm in over my head, and had a full-on panic attack, just stood at the podium.
Shit.
And you can see in the video, he just goes pure white.
Oh God.
Yeah, but then when he got in there,
he was great.
Yeah, he did all right. Yeah.
He was great, yeah. They did win, the Goldman and the Brown family. Again, OJ obviously leaves a free man, but they were awarded $8.5 million compensatory damages and $25 million punitive damages, which is insane. And I think that's, oh yeah, absolutely. And that's when I think that OJ is declared bankrupt, because he's going to have to pay that, those damages and compensatory.
So only in America could you be declared bankrupt while still raking in $250,000 a month in an NFL pension.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Shall we talk about what OJ does after? I mean, there's not a lot for quite a while.
Quiet for a bit, laying low a bit.
Yeah.
But then he just starts committing crimes like a lunatic.
He's just like, fuck it, I'm about this life now.
Yeah, well, he probably thinks he can get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was proven unable to pay the damages of 33 and something million. And they, Nicole's family and Ron's family agreed instead to split the proceeds from an auction of Simpson's memorabilia and his other belongings and stuff like that, one of which was his Heisman trophy.
Yeah.
They auctioned that off as well.
Did one of the gloves go?
Don't know.
How much did that sell for?
Could you imagine?
It's probably on Murderpedia. Probably
knocking about somewhere, aren't they? 1999, the state of California actually issues a tax lien against Simpson for owed personal income taxes as well. So he was tax dodging as well, by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, he didn't go down for that, actually, because they're well good at sending people away for that.
Yeah, they were really strict on things like that. If you're trying to screw the government, that's it.
Simpsons memorabilia and everything, it sold for almost $400,000, which is nothing compared to the 30-odd million that, that the families were awarded, which is insane. He's quiet for a bit. September 2000, Simpson's girlfriend at the time, which was Christy Prody, who we talked about on the last episode, she calls the police and says that Simpson had broken into her home. There were no charges filed. However, that was the fourth time that she had called the police about such an incident. Interesting. I'm noticing a pattern.
A pattern of behaviour.
So four times the police were dispatched to handle a domestic abuse incident between the couple. Interesting.
It's ridiculous.
He is arrested in December of 2000 on battery and auto burglary charges after an alleged confrontation with another motorist. Interesting. He was acquitted of all charges the following year in 2001. I mean, again, pattern of behavior, just ridiculous. What else? I mean, he's got a laundry list. I've got a whole list here. December 2001, FBI and DEA searched Simpson's home for evidence that he might have been involved with an ecstasy smuggling ring, as well as money laundering and a coordinated effort to steal satellite TV signals.
That's a weird one.
He just fucking what?
Weirder and weirder, doesn't he?
Yeah, it does.
Like, at one point, I was expecting him to start walking around with like a tinfoil hat on.
He got up one morning and just thought, yeah, I'll just try all the crimes.
Yeah. That's, he can do anything, but he's got that ego boost. Like, he's living off that, not a guilty verdict, and he thinks he's untouchable. Yeah. He really does think he's untouchable.
That's it. He doesn't have the life that he had before, where everyone looks up to him and thinks like, oh my god, this like perfect human. He's like so good at sport, and he's like a really nice, charming, charismatic guy. And he's got the like all the police are his best friends, and all the like his best friends like they kind of wash their hands of and he's like, oh. Fuck, and no one wants to employ me anymore, no one thinks I'm golden balls anymore, blah blah blah. So it's like, but he still has an ego, he's still a narcissist, he still needs that feeding, he still wants to be the be all and end all. So I suppose he just takes that other path towards it instead.
Yeah. Even now he's like that. Like when he came out of prison, the first thing he did was start a Twitter account. Hello, Twitter world.
Oh my God, hello, Twitter world.
Have you seen it?
It's so cringe. No. It's fucking cringe.
A video of him playing golf and he just looks at the camera and goes, hello, Twitter world. Oh, it's me, OJ.
Go away. Get in a box.
But he had lot to say about the Gabby Petito thing and all, didn't he?
Oh, I didn't know about this until you mentioned it on the last episode. Yeah. But please do elaborate.
Well, there's plenty. If you look on his Instagram, it's all still there.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell.
That's so weird.
Jesus Christ. While you're looking for that, I'll just reel off a couple of other things. July 2002, he was cited for speeding on his powerboat through a manatee zone. He was arrested because he missed his court hearing and he ended up paying a $130 fine for that.
It's just such an
$130.
That's
it. Wow. Bankrupt and he just keeps doing things. I mean, he has to keep paying out fines. It's like, why don't you just fucking go off, find yourself somewhere nice to live and chill.
Just shut up. Just stay out of the way. His Instagram's gone, by the way.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
Oh, interesting.
I deleted Twitter, so I can't check that.
So he did go to... he did have a civil trial in 2005, which was about the TV signal theft charges in 2001. when his house was raided and he was remanded to pay $25,000 to the satellite cable company.
Yeah, too right and all. Ridiculous. Bloody hell.
September 2007. This is the main incident, shall we say.
I find this just ridiculous.
It's just hilarious, isn't it?
I thought when I was like learning about you, what a way of putting that, Sam. When I was learning about you.
I was studying for my OJ exams.
Could you imagine studying for an OJ exam?
OJ levels.
OJ levels? Oh, brilliant.
It felt like I was like watching a film. Like it wasn't like this didn't happen, this wasn't real, he didn't do this, like this is ridiculous, it's just embarrassing. I felt awkward watching it because I felt embarrassed.
Yeah,
he doesn't know or care about who I am, and I was like, I'm embarrassed for OJ Simpson.
Yeah, secondhand embarrassment.
Yeah.
September 2007, according to a police report, two sports memorabilia dealers claimed that Simpson and five other men, some of them armed, barged into their Las Vegas hotel room and stole various items, which Simpson claimed had originally been stolen from him.
So
I mean,
weird.
It's just fucking mental, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he was probably surrounding himself by crazy people as well by this point.
Yeah. 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 What was hilarious as well was that he said at one point that he didn't know that the people that he was with were armed.
Of course not.
Even though he was found with guns and all kinds of shit as well.
That's it.
But he didn't know.
He was like charged with like kidnap, wasn't it? Or something. Because he couldn't. He said a line, didn't he, that was recorded.
Well, he basically just wouldn't let them leave the room.
It was recorded, wasn't it? And then that's what they used. But he said something like, you can't leave, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, well, there you go. That's called kidnapping.
I mean,
he's such an aggressive person. Like, he's terrifying. He's like a big, aggressive monster. He's huge and full of anger.
Self-importance
is the overriding factor, isn't it? That coupled with his temper, I mean, it's just a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So he's arrested and charged with several counts of robbery with a deadly weapon, burglary with a deadly weapon, and conspiracy to commit a crime, and obviously kidnapping.
Yeah.
ridiculous. So he is ultimately found guilty in October 2008, which is the following year that it happened, and he is sentenced in December of 2008 to 33 years in prison with eligibility for parole after 9 years.
Which he got.
Which he got, yeah, which he got, yeah. Yeah,
that's just ridiculous, isn't it? Like, why even try that high of a number if it's going to be that low of a number?
Yeah, I bet prison was easy for him too.
Oh yeah,
I bet everyone still was.
I bet everyone kissed his ass, didn't they? Yeah,
he was probably not. I don't know if he would have been put in the general population, or whether he went. Did he go to an actual prison or like a one of those celebrity prisons?
Don't know which prison he went to.
You get those white collar prisons, don't you? Where they're just
you do. He was
general prison population.
Yeah, Lovelock Correctional Center in Nevada.
Special treatment. Apparently, I mean, he would have been given some special treatment.
Oh hell yeah!
Like not as in like he got his own.
Yeah.
Like he was with everyone else. Yeah.
Yeah.
He something.
Yeah, he did appeal, and obviously. It was a no.
Harari's appeal. Like, how can you appeal this verbal evidence of you saying, like, but I suppose he got away with murder?
So he got away with so much evidence the first time.
True. I mean, he probably thought he was going to get away with it all over again, didn't he? Which is why he was probably so, you know, bold as brass and just didn't give a shit anyway.
Can you imagine how angry he would have been when he was like you're actually going to go to jail this time?
I'd love to have seen his face.
The dude got away. He shouldn't have got away with murder. I'm not, like, praising this anyway, but he got away with murder. So just accept that and, like, just live out the rest of your life, like, not being a twat. And he said he does it. Like, well, there you go. This time, mate, you're going to prison. Damn it.
It's a shame that we don't give these episodes silly titles because we could have called it OJ's a Twat.
Do you think he'd search for himself on Spotify?
Oh, I guarantee it.
Yeah, he would, wouldn't he?
I guarantee it, yeah.
It's weird, there's like conflicting information. So Simpson, he was granted parole for good behaviour on 5 of his 12 convictions. And he was finally released in October 2017.
Michael. Of course he was. He was so, like, charismatic and so, like, charming to people. He's going to be, like, making friends with all the, like, the officer people and everything. Yeah. Getting
Not to mention the inmates know he's got money, so they're going to be all up his arse.
True.
Extorting that money from him.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was released in October 2017. But the rest of his, so he was basically out on parole. But in December 2021, he was granted early release from his parole and probation. So he's not, he doesn't have to conform to the rules and regulations of his parole. So, yeah, he was officially a free man as of 2021, free to commit whatever crimes he likes now. I mean, he's 76 now, for fuck's sake.
I think he just plays golf. Every time I see someone posting about him, he's just playing golf.
Any other tidbits of...
I just think it's absolutely horrible because the whole thing takes away exactly what he done. So this whole thing is just—it's just like OJ,
all about him,
and not like two people were savagely murdered and their families absolutely left devastated and never really got full justice for it. And that's—it's like a byproduct.
I'm waiting for the day because Joe Rogan's always talking about getting OJ on his podcast, and I pray that happens. Yeah, he's talking about it all the time.
Oh God,
I'd love that. That would be the best episode. Just OJ, because Joe Rogan doesn't shy away from awkward questions.
Oh, I know he doesn't.
He would just grill the fuck out of him for 3 hours. It'd be brilliant.
Well.
I think he'd just revel in it, though. I actually think he'd revel in it.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah, I think he would, too.
Because somebody is paying attention to him. Yeah. So he's going to love it, isn't he?
So yeah. I don't think he'd even see it as that. I think he would just take it for what it is and try and work it in his favour.
Yeah.
The documentary that I watched, and I think there was the same one that you watched, Paul, the one that was like about 5-6 episodes long, he went on a radio show after he was found not guilty for the murders, and she, I don't know her name, but she's a relatively famous radio host. She's like a black radio host in America, and she was like very much like, we know what you don't know, Jay, and I don't like you. And then by the end of it, she was hugging him, telling him how handsome he was, and that he was such a great person, and she's really glad she had him on her show.
That's that Hollywood thing, though.
And the power of a narcissist.
Yeah, no, that's that Hollywood thing.
Do you think?
That's less about him and more about her. Because, I've heard, again, I don't know why it keeps coming back to this, but Joe Rogan, he talks about the LA mindset, where people will come up to you at parties and say, oh, hi, it's so good to see you again. Because they smooth so many people. They don't know whether they've spoken to this person before or not. So they just hedge their bets, and actors do it all the time.
Oh.
So it's false. Yeah, it's just no one's real there. It's just all everyone. It's all about how you're seen, like perception and, you know. Yeah, people aren't real there in LA. No,
true.
Oh, there are real people there, obviously. But like for the most, in that sort of zone.
Yeah.
Those people are not real. It's like The Rock was on his podcast recently, and it was 2 hours long. And by the end of the episode, all I'd heard The Rock say was the same shit he says on Instagram and on every other interview he's ever had. It's all stock answers for everything.
Yeah.
He's not a real person. It's weird.
Do you think he's just careful and guarded?
Yeah, he's just Mr. Industry.
Yeah,
he's just Mr. Industry. He's just so schooled in the art of celebrity.
Marketing,
nothing's real. You don't know the man. You don't know what
media
he's like.
They call it. It's like media training, isn't
it?
Yeah,
but like he's like the fucking guru of media training.
He's like conditioned to give those answers, isn't he?
He's like a politician.
Yeah, says a lot, but doesn't really say anything.
Exactly. Yeah, like he's had enough big actors on there, like. Robert Downey Jr. was on there, and that was a really interesting podcast. Like, he was open and honest about his past troubles, and like, he was just like a normal person.
Wow.
But The Rock ain't like, I don't know why this has gone to The Rock. What a weird tangent that is.
Talking about Joe
Rogan. Hi, it's Mike from the After Horror Podcast, telling you to listen to the After Horror Podcast. It's four idiots who occasionally talk about the film that we're supposed to be, you know, like doing and stuff. Give it a listen. Or don't, like, I'm not your dad, but, you know, I think you'd enjoy it.
Sam, it is your choice next. It'll be episode 52. Hit me.
I've gone with a bit of an unusual one, for my kind of choice. So, Delphine Lalaurie.
What do I know that name?
I don't.
So, I love this.
How do you spell it, please?
Lalaurie's L-A-L-A-U.
Oh, I found it. Okay. Okay.
So I feel like this would be more of a Paul thing, because this is just mostly about torture and gore. And it's less about like psychology, which I like, but it's absolutely fucking...
I've read a book about her.
That's interesting, yeah. It kind of made me think of Lady Bathory for a second there.
Very Lady Bathory, yeah. And I've been to New Orleans.
Yeah.
I'd love to go there.
I like the Lady Bathory story, but I just think a lot of it is based on, like, it's not all factual.
It's not factual,
The Lalaurie one, there is a lot of things that are made up, but you can find a lot of factual stuff on it. So I felt like that was the better one to go with if I was going to... Yeah. Go with something like this.
Oh, the Bathory one's almost certainly bullshit anyway.
Yeah, there was no evidence. It was all bullshit,
not just that,
and rumour.
It was common at the time to ruin someone's name if you wanted to get vengeance or some kind of uppance. And because she was a rich woman at the time, there were very few and far between. All the lords and barons and stuff didn't like it, so they just spread rumours.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah. Oh, Madame Lalaurie. Well, that's what she was known as, wasn't it? Madame Lalaurie.
Interesting. Yeah. Nice. A historical one.
Yeah, because this is, it's Kathy Bates in American Horror Story Coven.
Yeah.
I've not seen that.
It's the best one. It's my favourite one anyway.
I sort of fell off the train with American Horror Story after the first season.
After the first one, I haven't watched the last couple, but I loved Hotel. I didn't like Cults, and then I gave up with it.
Yeah.
I think I watched up to Freak Show. Is it Freak Show?
I loved Freak Show. Freak Show was the
carnival one. That was my favourite.
I might actually watch that one. I love carnivals. They freak me out. Like, carnivals I find inherently creepy.
Yeah, they are. I think that's the last one that
Did
I
Did you
watched.
Not watch one with Lady Gaga, the hotel one?
No.
Really good. And then I didn't really like them after that.
Okay.
I watched a part of Asylum, but I couldn't get into that. I watched like two episodes.
I didn't mind Asylum. Asylum's a lot of people's favourite.
I didn't like the first series that much.
Okay.
Oh, I like the first one. Asylum season two, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I liked that. I thought that was good. But Coven is my favourite. Again, obvious reasons. The Freak Show was season four was the last one that I watched. Yeah. Yeah, which was good. I did enjoy it. It was very good. I don't know why I didn't continue with it, but
it was kind of had a running theme of the serial killer in America that built that hotel that had all the hidden walls.
H.H. Holmes.
Yeah, it was H.H. Holmes. Yeah,
it was kind of based on that. So that's
Murder Castle.
Good. Yeah, which is that's a great one as well.
That's a great story.
Yeah. America's first serial killer.
Yeah.
None.
He loved his insurance money, didn't he?
He did.
He loved experimenting on people too.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Okay, excellent. So episode 52 will be about Delphine Lalaurie. And on that note, listeners, always remember to delete your Google history.